The following episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast deals with serious and sensitive topics. Listener discretion is advised. Hey everyone, I'm your host Adam Hampton, and welcome back to this special Lyrics of Their Life mini-episode. Now, if you listen to our most recent episode on the story of Billie Jean, you'll remember that I left you with a lingering mystery. At the time of recording the Billie Jean episode, and for many years in fact, the trail had gone cold on the whereabouts of the controversial stalker, LaVon Powlis. I told you that after the intense court cases of 2008 and 2009, that LaVon Powlis seemed to completely vanish from the headlines, leaving the world to wonder if she was living quietly in institutional care or if she had quietly passed away altogether. Well, scratch that, because I now have the answers for you. Because just days ago, an absolute bombshell dropped right after I pressed upload, as a groundbreaking and incredibly revealing interview surfaced, conducted by YouTuber and podcast host Sean McDowell, featuring the eldest daughter of LaVon Powlis herself, named Lynege Garrison, as she finally stepped forward and felt courageous enough to tell her side of the story. And what Lynege revealed changes absolutely everything, flipping the Billie Jean monster narrative completely on its head and pulling back the curtain on the heartbreaking reality of mental illness. While she also reflects on what it was like growing up in that environment and the real human collateral left in the song's wake. So here is everything we didn't know. So strap yourselves in for this special episode.
Prince has died at the age of 57.
Yes, sir.
Sorry, Gary, but I was always the talented member of the band.
Keep booing, little girl. I will hit a man with glasses.
I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish. But Beyonce had one of the best videos of all time.
Former Beatle John Lennon, who was 40, was shot and killed last night outside his luxury apartment in New York.
Has-beens shouldn't present fucking awards to Gunna Be.
Leave Britney alone!
During the interview with Sean McDowell, Lynege Garrett revealed that her mother suffered from severe, unmedicated mental illness and was left to raise her children as a poor single mother. Lynege also revealed that LaVon also had a fourth child, Lynege's older half-brother, born to a different, abusive man, which left a lasting effect on both her brother and her mother. Sadly, Lynege's brother was frequently in trouble with the law, locked in a volatile cycle of escaping the house and clashing with his mother, before he ultimately landed himself in prison. His absence left his younger siblings Lynege and the twins completely isolated, forced to navigate their mother and her mental illnesses alone, as LaVon could be terrifyingly unpredictable, capable of switching from fiercely loving one minute to angry and abusive the next. With Lynege claiming that her mother used to blame their problems on Michael Jackson being mad at them. What followed was a tragic childhood defined by severe neglect and delusional behaviour. LaVon told the children that Michael Jackson was their biological father, leading Lynege to grow up idolising Michael, even wanting to be a singer just like him, as she often got about the house dancing to Thriller, much to her mother's delight. Lanege also confirmed that her mother would justify the inconsistencies in the lyrics of Billie Jean just to fit her own delusional narrative, claiming that when Michael sang Billie Jean is not my lover, it actually meant he was my lover, and that the kid is not my son, secretly translated to, because you are our daughter. The delusion ran so deep with Lavon that she would send letters to the children from prison with the address on the letter matching Michael's, reading the likes of 5225 Figueroa Mountain Road, Los Olivos, California, aka Neverland, or 4641 Havenhurst Avenue, Encino, California, Michael's family estate. Sadly, Lanege and the twins would be in and out of foster care and the court system, since Lanege was just 3 years old, while also living between her mother's and aunt's places across states like Illinois, California, and New York. It was a very unstable childhood, full of custody battles and intense paranoia, out of fear that their own mother would kidnap them. Often left to fend for themselves, while their mother suffered through severe psychotic breaks, Lanege would be required to look after her younger siblings, with neighbours occasionally checking in on their welfare after weeks to a month of their mother missing. Lanege would recount a devastating memory from when she was only 7 years old. When Lavon suspected child services were headed her way to collect the children after neglecting them, Lavon packed Lanege and the baby twins onto an Amtrak train from Chicago to Los Angeles, with no tickets and just $60 to their name. Her mother's plan? To walk straight into the gates of Michael's Havenhurst estate, or as Lavon referred to it as, home. Together, Lavon and the three children would make the massive 44-hour, 2,265-mile journey to their destination, luckily receiving the grace of a friendly ticket inspector who allowed them to ride for free. When they arrived, Lavon led the kids straight through the gates of Havenhurst the first chance she got, only for the family to be instantly swarmed by security, which frightened the children to death, as Lavon was already on their security watch list for previous break-ins. For the next 2 weeks, the family lived in the dirt, camping right outside the gates of the Jackson family compound. Lanege actually recalls passing the time playing with snails in the dirt, waiting for any sign of her so-called father to emerge, as she recalls moments where Michael would drive out in disguises, even dressing like a clown so the fans at the gate wouldn't notice. Sadly, Lavon and the children frequently went hungry, though local restaurants felt so much pity for them that they would occasionally give them food. Even Michael's mother, Catherine Jackson, appeared to have a soft spot for the children. Concerned for their well-being, she, one of Michael's sisters, and other members of the estate would quietly come out to give the struggling family some money for food. The makeshift camp outside the Havenhurst gates would come to a sudden end one evening when Lavon and the kids asked a local taxi driver if they could sleep through the night in his cab. The kind man would agree as the children drifted off to sleep in the back of the vehicle, only for Lavon to wake Lanege up, telling her, "I'm just popping out to make a quick phone call." That quick phone call turned into hours, and before they knew it, the sun had come up, as the cab driver asked Lanege where her mother was. Unsure of her whereabouts, they eventually realised, like many times before, that she had abandoned them. The cab driver would take the three children to the local police station, where child services became involved and they were placed into the foster care system. Because the twins had a different biological father, they were sent to live with an aunt and uncle in Georgia, while sadly, their older half-sister, Lanege, who was still yet to learn the identity of her own biological father, was left behind, forced into an endless cycle of foster care homes. She was eventually rescued and adopted at age 12 by her maternal aunt, who was a university professor at the private Biola Christian University in California, known for being a centre for biblical and missionary training. This came after Lanege expressed to her aunt over the phone that she was scared for her safety, having been physically abused and fearing that sexual abuse could follow after some strange occurrences. Lanege was kept from phoning her family more than twice a month and expressed that the final straw was when her nasty foster mother forced her to eat a piece of fish, literally ramming it down her throat to the point of gagging and throwing up, followed by forcing her to then eat her own vomit. As Lanege told her aunt that if she couldn't get out of there in the next 2 weeks, she was thinking of running away to sleep on the New York streets. Worried for the welfare of her niece, her aunt raced against the clock to get custody of her. With just 2 weeks to pass the foster care requirements to have a home ready for Lanege to move into, her aunt realised she lacked a bathtub and other requirements to make her apartment suitable. That's when God worked in mysterious ways as a literal sewage leak caused by a cracked pipe in the building flooded her aunt's apartment, leaving it an absolute mess. Covered in feces and in no way ready to house a 12-year-old girl, everything looked hopeless until her aunt prayed to God. And next thing she knew, she was being upgraded by management to a much nicer apartment upstairs, which came with a bathtub and all of the requirements she needed. As her aunt passed the inspection with flying colours and young Lanege was saved. It was under her aunt's roof that Lanege would eventually convert to Christianity, a profound shift from how she had been raised. Growing up, Lavon had raised the children as part of the Islamic faith. In fact, Lanege revealed that her mother changed her birth name from Lanege to the Islamic name Amina Muhammad, while the twins were named Ansar and Aisha Muhammad. This stemmed from Lavon's past having been with Muslim men, while years earlier, Lavon had actually worked in the offices for the American-based Nation of Islam leader Elijah Muhammad, the pivotal figure responsible for transforming a small Detroit-based group into a nationwide movement with tens of thousands of members. While living with her aunt, Lanege would occasionally see her mother on TV during interviews with the likes of TMZ, as she was still attempting to pursue Michael Jackson in court. While Lanege also revealed to Sean McDowell that her mother previously worked as a court reporter and was so convincing and articulate that during visits to psychiatric hospitals during psych evaluations that she even had doctors and psychiatrists fooled and wondering if there was some truth to her outlandish claims. While Lanege revealed that her mother never changed her story and kept specific notes on dates and occurrences, which is a big reason why the courts continued to allow her to file lawsuits against Michael and receive reduced sentences. Tragically, Lavon Paulus would spend the rest of her life caught in a vicious cycle in and out of institutions, care homes, rehabilitation, prison, and living on the streets to continue her stalking of Michael. Although she was initially granted visitation rights to her children, the Illinois courts eventually stripped her of all her parental rights, leaving Lanege and her siblings to live for years in constant fear that their mother would return to kidnap them. Lanege confirmed during the interview that in 2024, her mother Lavon Paulus did in fact pass away in a care home at the age of 76, and that she was still deeply gripped by her delusions until her final month, where she told Lanege, quote, "Michael is punishing us." Lanege claimed it was a, quote, "sad and painful end to her mother's life and their relationship, as they weren't talking much towards the end. However, as she was still her mother, she was saddened by her death and grieved her." While Lanege's children would actually meet Levon for just the second time during her final year, after choosing to keep them away from her mother. In another twist of fate, Levon's eldest son, who had just been released from a 30-year prison sentence, missed saying goodbye to his mother by only 3 weeks. Essentially, the mental health care system failed Levon and her children. Had she received the right treatment and care in the 80s, then perhaps none of this would have ever happened. Lanege, on the other hand, would first meet her real biological father at the age of 19 while attending university, revealing that he was a large black Muslim man living in Arizona who had a number of other children to a different mother, with one of her half-brothers appearing almost identical to her. After many years of uncertainty and never actually being told the truth, she now had closure that Michael Jackson was 100% not her real father, and put to bed any theories that had haunted her life for over 40 years. Lanege claimed that after meeting her real biological father, that she felt anger towards him for abandoning the family, not realizing the hurt he had caused, what she had been through as a young woman, and for not coming forward and putting an end to these ridiculous rumours that she was the daughter of Michael Jackson sooner. Despite a lifetime of profound trauma, to the point where Lanege couldn't bear to play Billie Jean for her own kids, or even hear it out in public, as it brings her straight back to that troublesome and traumatic time, she holds absolutely no ill will toward the Jackson family, as she explicitly set the record straight, stating, quote, "They didn't contribute to her illness. They weren't the reason for her delusion, and they are just kind of the recipients of the consequences of what she chose." Before continuing to say that she felt terrible that Michael and his family had to deal with her obsessiveness over the years. But if there is any light to be found in the dark shadow of the Havenhurst gates, it's the impressive, intelligent, and level-headed woman that Lanege grew up to become. After trying her hand at acting, today she is a happily married woman with 3 sons of her own and attended Biola University herself before graduating in 1994. She now operates her own platform under her married name, Lanege Garrison. She holds advanced Christian-based theological degrees and works professionally as a hospital chaplain and apologetics teacher, teaching the scriptures and her Christian faith to others. The little girl who was once left starving in the dirt, playing with snails while awaiting the King of Pop's presence, now spends her days on the front lines of the healthcare system, helping others to navigate their own deep trauma, mental illness, and grief. As Lanege took a childhood defined by a pop star's nightmare and a mother's tragic brokenness and turned it into a lifetime of healing and positivity. And that wraps up this episode of Lyrics of Their Life podcast. Thank you all for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. If this is your first time tuning in to our show, don't forget to hit the follow or subscribe button so you don't miss our future episodes. And if you're really enjoying the show, a quick rating or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts goes a long way in helping us to grow. If you would like to follow the podcast, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, X, and TikTok at Lyrics of Their Life Podcast, or on our website at lyricsoftheirlife.com for updates and more. If you'd like to support the podcast further and help keep episodes like this coming, you can head over to my Patreon at patreon.com/lyricsoftheirlifepodcast, or you can buy me a coffee over at buymeacoffee.com/lyricsoflifepod. Every bit of support means the world to me and helps make episodes like this one possible. Whether you're a long-time listener or just discovering the show for the first time, thank you for being here and supporting the show in whatever form that comes in. Thanks again for listening. I'm your host, Adam Hampton, and this is Lyrics of Their Life.